C7. Number 22A.
We take the last chapter, the chapter on the apocalypse. Again, perhaps we start out best with the scriptural note, which gives us a sense of the onelessness and the timelessness of being. In that scriptural note we read, "Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein. For the time is at hand." The time is at hand. Written in the language of 2,000 years ago, meaning now is now. Now is isness. And it is right at hand, meaning at hand was always a sense of operation. One did things with one's hands. So isness is operating. Isness is omniactive. Giving at once a sense, we don't have anything anymore to do with the time sense, with the space sense, that everything is at the point of infinite action, of omni-action. Actually, that chapter speaks very much about this infinite coincidence of everything right now, coincidence meaning really to correspond exactly, to occupy, as the definition goes, the same place in space and the same period of time. So coincidence really is that sense which frees ourselves of time and space. Everything is at the point of isness, but it is at hand. It means it is operative omni-action. This chapter is full of that sense of coincidence and correlation. She speaks of the coincidence of God and man as what? As the divine principle and divine idea. Here in this chapter she really tries now to remove that sense of God and man and replaces it with the concept of principle and divine idea. It is quite amazing how much it takes for a Christian scientist to get away from the sense of always thinking and speaking in terms of God and in terms of man, in terms of we and he and she, in terms of mankind and things like that, and to see that being does not know people, does not know men, does not know a universe of people, but only ideas. It seems so hard to get away from all that hell of a peopleianity and just see the purity and simplicity of constantly only thinking in terms of principle and idea. And therefore as the coincidence of principle and idea. Where principle is, idea is. Where idea is, principle is. So that everything is actually nothing else but principle idea in operation. Everything is principle idea in operation. There is no other concept anymore. And then we will see how in this chapter all the other concepts are resolved that seem to show that something else is going on besides principle idea. She speaks here in this chapter about correlation, which again indicates this coincidence translated to the level of absolute Christian science. Correlation is the reciprocal relations. It says, Webster says, correlation means things so connected that one directly implies the other. That one directly implies the other. that principle directly implies idea. That idea directly implies principle. That we can no more think of principle without idea. We can no more think of idea without thinking of principle. That's the sense of correlation. And Mrs. Eddy then speaks of the correlation of the divine principle and spiritual idea. And then showing how that translates itself to the level of Christian Science, bringing harmony to earth. So we can see in this chapter, we always feel that she goes right up and down the levels of science, that coincidence becomes really correlation, and correlation becomes harmonious relationship in the human, really harmony on earth. So one only has to hear really with one's spiritual ear dimensionally, instead of looking at terms, at words, and one just always sees that this oneness of being is that terrific oneness of principle idea. If I have principle idea, that's the coincidence that has an inner relationship where one directly demands the other one, and so you have from coincidence on the level of divine science, correlation on the level of absolute Christian science, bringing harmony on earth, which is also a relationship in the human, bringing harmony on earth on Christian science. We will see that these levels just always seem to flow into each other in that whole chapter. But let's see what the second scriptural note will teach us. It says, "Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised in the city of our God." In the city of our God. How? In the mountain of His holiness. Mrs. Eddy explains that city as a fourfold calculus of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Therefore, greatly praised is the Lord in that fourfold calculus of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Here, Mrs. Eddy does not indicate greatly will be praised God because He has healed me of a stomach trouble, or because He had solve this or that little human problem. Greatly praised is God, that God is omniactive in the omniactivity of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. Can you hear again how we begin to feel that now we are beginning more and more to demonstrate not things, not the solution of problems, but that we are going to demonstrate the system, the categories, the levels of being. That is what we have to demonstrate. So greatly to be praised in the city of our God. And when Mrs. Eddy speaks about that city of our God, she explains it as God, the divine principle of harmony, is ever with men. It's our God. And they are His people. Again, we can see the co-relationship of God and man in the holy city, therefore showing actually that city of Word, Christ, Christianity, and science is a new term for what has been called man. That actually in the place of the term man, we have a fourfold calculus, and that is really that which is the phenomena, the creation of God. And divine, infinite calculus. We could see in recapitulation that Mrs. Eddy brought out that instead of the term man, we could have the term the compound idea. And indicated in that way that that compound idea has a structure. But now, in the last chapters, he shows that that compound idea is a calculus of ideas, that the ideas constituting the compound idea man is actually a calculus of idea, because it's the omni-action of idea. Omni-action does not mean action like in a swarm of gnats, where everything is moving and you don't see any order in it and there doesn't seem to be any purpose in it. It is the omni-action according to very definite categories and laws that exist in being. And only in that way we really should consider omni-action. It isn't wild action. It is not unintegrated action. It is not unrelated action. It is very disciplined action, disciplined into the system of science. And because we can see that, we really can see that omni-action as our true identity, as our conscious identity of being, if we discipline ourselves into this omni-action and get more and more into the habit of always thinking in terms of where does word, where does Christ, where does Christianity, where does science, Christ as word, Christ as Christ, see that we go along the calculus of ideas and begin to see man as that compound idea which is a calculus of idea. Not just a compound idea where you just put ideas on top of each other until one has a heap of ideas. It must be something very structured, very law-abiding, system-abiding, in order to have a calculus. So when the scriptural note says that great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, so we can see greatly is that principle to be praised in the calculus of ideas called men. There should he be praised. That is really the pinnacle of consciousness, to see that man, that term man, that name man, stands now for a calculus of ideas. That is, where every idea within the compound idea is operating according to system and to laws. So with this general overall view on what the chapter wants to drive at, I want to explain to you the main lines of this chapter. I haven't done that up to now when I was presenting each chapter. I just was presenting it always from the point of view of those statements in the chapter which would indicate the oneness of being. But here in this last chapter, I think one can't help it, but in order to bring out that oneness as a calculus of ideas, as a calculus of ideas which is true on the level of divine science and is true on the level of absolute Christian science and is true on the level of Christian science, that perhaps it will be better or easier or gives a much bigger impact if I just draw, so to say, the big line that goes right through the chapter in an ordered way. Most of it you will find in my chapter, in my book, The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, where I show this line, the layout of the chapter, and I also want to say that that layout of the chapter is not my insight into the chapter, but that's what John Dorley used to teach in between his presentation of something else, that he would here and there give an indication of the layout of this chapter, and I still feel what he has shown there is the most inspired and the most scientific layout of that chapter. So, what this chapter tries to show is actually this omni-active idea on all levels of thought. That, so to say, the calculus of idea is not only a calculus of idea that has to be considered within the level of divine science from the point of view of oneness, but that it is still the calculus of idea, no matter if it works on the level of Christian science or of absolute Christian science or on divine science. Mr. Dooley interpreted this chapter as the ascending and the descending through the levels. He presented it that first the text would show how thought ascends from the level of Christian science to the level of absolute Christian science and to the level of divine science, and then shows the descent from the level of divine science to absolute Christian science to Christian science. Also indicating, without that he actually showed it and explained it, that was usually his way of doing it, he just stated it and left to his students to find out why he said it and to prove it from the text why he said it, indicating in this way that actually that ascending way is the way of understanding, where really thought acquaints itself intelligently with God to the point of oneness of principle and idea, and that the descending way is the way of demonstration, how this oneness demonstrates itself as an impact on the level of absolute Christian science and then of Christian science. And so I want to depict this story in my terms, with my words, just to summarize the story, and perhaps when I summarize and take out the main highlights, that perhaps even then the whole picture becomes perhaps clear and has more relief, has more texture. The chapter takes us up first, as I said, from the level of Christian science to the level of absolute and then divine science. So it starts out with the level of Christian science. And you see it right away. Mrs. Eddy, in order to explain that level of Christian science, takes from the revelation of St. John a verse out of the 10th chapter first. You know that symbolism where John was shown an angel coming down from heaven. An angel coming down from heaven. And you at once hear, oh, this has to do with angel, and angels are always interpreted as thoughts, never as ideas. Angels are only symbols of divine thoughts, not of divine ideas. There are angels come down from heaven, they are not in heaven, they come down because thoughts come down. Because we know heaven is a state of idea, and when that translates itself right down to the human, ideas appear as God's thoughts. So you can see right away that the starting point is there, where our consciousness is reaching out for divine thoughts, for the angels, and see that we should have an inspiration from God and therefore are awaiting these messages from heaven that come to us as thoughts. And that angel was clothed with a cloud. It was clouded. Every thought is clouded. No thought is pure, or it would be idea. A thought, therefore, only could hint to the idea, hint to the science of being. And so Mrs. Eddy says, It prefigures divine science. It does not depict divine science, does not explain divine science. It prefigures. It is a stage before thought is purified to the point of being an idea, and then see the clarity and purity of divine science. So it only prefigures divine science, and you can see, oh, this has to do with the mental realm, with the realm of divine thoughts, just having a touch of divine science, getting a promise of divine science. A rainbow was upon his head, a promise, the rainbow of the symbol of the ark of the covenant that God made with Noah, was a bow of promise, a sevenfold rainbow. Now, a rainbow with seven colors, you see, as a promise. And here we feel when thought comes from God, at the point of God's thoughts, it has a terrific promise, but it's still a promise. It only prefigures what divine science may teach us. And in this picture we see that the angel's face was, as it were, the sun. You see one big radiance, but a radiance that is not structured, because the sun is just one big effulgence of light. Therefore thought just has that terrific promise of an infinite light, not yet structured. Its feet were pillars of fire, and in his hand a little book open. The right foot has a feet of fire that will be very strong and be able to devour something. The right foot upon the sea, upon elementary latent error, it could see that it was able, that this vision would be able to handle, through that feet of fire, to handle latent error, and that his left foot was upon the earth, upon visible error and audible sin, that this vision was telling, promising, that it would also be able to handle error, visible error, on the level of Christian science. That was the bow of promise upon his head. So the book was open, you know, before in Revelation the book was closed. The book is now open. It means that really the angel's thought, that thought within us that reaches out for divine science, should be able to read the textbook now. That the textbook should no more be a closed book, just a enigma, but that it is open, that the revelation is here, and that thought should be able to grasp this revelation. That's one picture. The bow of promise. What kind of promise? And so Mrs. Eddy takes from the 12th chapter of the revelation of St. John, the picture of a woman. Angel now becomes woman. It's no more an angel. And woman really means idea. So Mrs. Eddy leads now thought to the point of idea. Angels become woman. Woman closed with the sun. Woman, the idea, closed with the whole principle. No separation. Here we have the coexistence and correlation of principle and idea. So that here thought has risen from the angel's thought to the point of seeing that everything has to do with idea. Idea closed with its principle. Idea one with its principle. Not isolated idea, but idea closed with the sun. The moon under her feet. Now, matter is subject to the idea. It's under her feet. And the woman was crowned with 12 stars. 12 was always a symbol in the Bible for complete demonstration. We had the 12 apostles, and when one would fall out, they had to replace it in order to have a complete sense of demonstration, a complete sense of Christianity. And they indicate, as Mrs. Eddy says, the activities of the divine principle in the harmony of signs. So again, we have a sense these 12 are the omniactive activity of the idea in principle. And again we get the sense, or now we get the sense, that the idea is not just a isolated idea or a static idea, but that it is an omniactive idea that is able to demonstrate itself under every circumstance. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy explains that the main object of that 12th chapter is what? Of that 12th chapter of Revelation is what? That it typifies the divine method of warfare in science and the glorious results from this warfare. So it depicts the divine method of warfare in science, how the activities of an idea are taking care of everything that seems to oppose the idea. And so again you have a sense that this calculus of idea is now here shown on the level of Christian science, how it takes care with the opposing beliefs. And the interpretation of the various verses here now indicate how this warfare is taking place when the warfare is led from with a divine method. So, what is that divine method? And I just run quickly through it. We don't want to explain everything. She starts out that that woman idea, which was close with the sun, appeared in heaven. You know, the angel came down from heaven, but the woman was in heaven. Therefore, in the idea, it was not a translated sense of idea to the point of thought. It's in heaven, it's the idea. And the woman being with child, travailing in birth. And we get the sense here of woman travailing in birth, the activities of the idea to bring forth a new idea, to bring forth the purity, the strength of the right idea.